Well, there was a time when being a homosexual meant being closeted. Of course, there are still people who are, but today there are gay parades, gays in the military. We wondered, how has this affected parenting? Of course, there are still parents who might want to pray the gay away. But what about parents who want to guide their children but are confronting a foreign landscape? PFLAG, the support group, has pamphlets for what to do when your child comes out. But they're reporting that more parents are asking questions about their four-year-olds. Questions like, my boy plays with dolls, my little girl loves to roughhouse. If it means they are homosexual, I want to support them. How do I do that? In fact, the New York Times quotes a therapist saying that parents can be too supportive. One came in declaring her child transgender and then demanded hormone blockers. As the therapist said, take a deep breath. We want to do that today with Jesse Baring, a psychologist and a regular columnist for Scientific American Mind and Slate. His article in the July 2012 issue of Scientific American Mind is titled, Is Your Child Gay? Jesse, let's start with the science first. You are a gay man. You write that by 10, you were as indistinguishably annoying as your male peers. In other words, you seemed all boy. But what about the intuitive feeling that parents have that when boys don't act like boys or girls don't act like girls, at least the expectation, they are gay? You say the science is very flawed, but what are the studies, first of all?
There are two ways to go about determining or predicting or forecasting whether a child will grow up to be gay, or to look at sort of the relationship between their early developmental pattern of behavior and their adult sexual orientation. The first method is known as the prospective method of sexual orientation studies. And the prospective method basically requires you to have a large sample of children starting at a very early age, perhaps the age of about 3 or 4, and tracing them over time until they reach the age of sexual maturity, let's say the age of 16 or so, and finding out whether the behaviors that they're demonstrating at very young ages somehow relates to their sexual orientation once they're older. And there are problems associated with this in the sense, first of all, that it takes a very long time. Also, not a lot of parents, of course, are going to volunteer their very young children for studies of sexual orientation. And furthermore, you know, because there really are a fairly limited number of children who could be technically classified as pre-homosexual, it requires a very large sample of children to actually do any sort of significant study in this way. The other technique for exploring the relationship between early childhood behaviors and later sexual orientation is called the retrospective method, which basically means that now you've got both gay and straight adults reflecting on their early childhood behaviors and experiences and trying to see if there's any sort of meaningful correlation or connection between their earliest years and who they're attracted to as adults. And that, too, is similarly problematic, or at least it's biased psychologically, because we tend to think that, you know, gay men were categorically more effeminate or are categorically more effeminate. So if you happen to be a gay man now, you know, maybe you're looking at your childhood experiences through that particular lens and you see your behaviors in your earlier childhood as being more effeminate than perhaps they were. Or likewise, if you're a lesbian, perhaps you see your early childhood experiences being more tomboyish than in fact they actually were. One way to sort of get around this cleverly is to look at home videos and to ask people that don't know what the adult sexual orientation happens to be to look at the home videos of these children, you know, many, many years ago, and to sort of get their sort of gist sense of whether they were going to be gay or straight as adults.
And this is what one of the studies did, looked at home videos.
This is, in fact, one of the studies did, yeah. So there was a statistically significant effect in the sense that naive raters could predict, looking simply at home videos, who in these films of children were actually going to grow up to be gay adults.
You say naive. In other words, people who didn't know would look at the films and say that child there is going to be the one. And they were most often right. I mean, you say it's a hard thing for people to accept, but there are stereotypes that are true. Well, this is fascinating because, again, in that New York Times article I mentioned from a year ago, researchers say the behavior of these very young children may not be a strong predictor of their adult sexual orientation. They quote a Dr. Edgardo Menviel, who directs the Gender and Sexuality Psychosocial Programs at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., as saying that when a child does things that are gender variant, you know, when it's a boy who plays with dolls or a girl that roughhouses, when they're four, it doesn't necessarily mean that they will be variant when they're 10 or 15. But you looked at other research that shows that, in fact, some of the stereotypes do hold true.
Yeah. So, in fact, that researcher is correct in the sense that there isn't a perfect correlation between early childhood behaviors and adult sexual orientation. But there is other research, quite a lot of research, in fact, suggesting that gender atypical behaviors in early childhood are predictive of adult sexual orientation. Atypical in the sense of not really conforming to the majority of those in the same biological sex. So, you know, one sort of broad category that encompasses this is the domain of play behavior. And researchers for quite a while now have known that there really are meaningful differences between the play styles of boys and girls. Boys are much more attracted, for example, to rough-and-tumble play with other boys, whereas girls are much more oriented toward, you know, these sort of demure or maternal behaviors. If you look at their symbolic play or pretend play styles, they're more likely to take the role of the mother or a princess or something like that in the narrative script. And I think a lot of critics might say that, well, of course that's the case because these, you know, no matter how young the child is, they've still been indoctrinated into the cultural system, the script or the narrative in terms of what a boy or a girl is supposed to be. But, you know, interestingly, we find these types of effects even in other species. In monkeys, for example, we find these sort of rough and tumble play styles in male monkeys, young monkeys, and not in young female monkeys. So it's very difficult to argue for the sort of cultural indoctrination effect.
There seems to be a sea change with parents, a younger generation of parents who really do want to help their children through something that maybe a couple of generations ago parents might have repressed.
I do think there's a bit of a water change in the sense of parents actually wanting to know whether their child is gay or not to help them developmentally. And we can draw from science to sort of help them along the way.
Yeah, and help them not only maybe guide their children, but I'm guessing confront what they might be discovering are their own prejudices.
I think so. I mean, if you were sort of to place most parents sort of against the wall, I think we would be hard-pressed to find a parent that would actually prefer a gay child. One thing that might be operating even at the unconscious level in parents' minds is the fact that if they have a gay child, then their reproductive success is going to be compromised in some fashion. But the fact that we have changed so dramatically in a cultural sense in terms of gays being able to have children changes the game in a very interesting way.
Gay kids can expand the family as well. That's Jesse Baring. His article in Scientific American Mind is called Is Your Child Gay? A 2010 study by the Family Acceptance Project at San Francisco State University found strong correlations between positive family attitudes toward gay children and decreased risks of depression and suicide. There are parents pulling kids out of schools that don't let those kids cross-dress. But can you be wrong about your child's inclinations and what happens then? We're going to have more with Jesse in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back. We've been talking with Jesse Baring, psychologist and author. His article in the July 2012 issue of Scientific American Mind is titled, Is Your Child Gay? He's been telling us about relatively new and imperfect research that does conclude that while there are so-called pre-homosexual children, you know, toddlers, who don't exhibit any atypical behaviors for their gender but grow up to be gay, it's more likely that atypical behaviors, say boys playing with dolls, means a child will be homosexual. The New York Times is writing about parents who are increasingly celebrating those atypical behaviors online on Facebook and blogs. The J. Crew April 2012 catalog featured Jenna Lyons. This is the company's creative director, and she's giving her 4.5-year-old son a bright pink pedicure with the caption, "Lucky for me, I ended up with a boy whose favorite color is pink." Jon Stewart ended up calling that Tomageddon after the talk shows went crazy. But what is a parent to do if the science says this atypical behavior is probably a forecaster of homosexuality? Should they lay the groundwork for that reality or leave it alone? Jesse, pick it up there. We're thinking that a child that loves pink nail polish or wears his mother's high heels could become a high-priced heterosexual fashion designer. You know, so how should a parent navigate this?
Well, I think you navigate it very carefully. We don't want to necessarily impose prematurely some sort of sexual orientation on a child that actually doesn't have any type of demonstrable sexual desires. How can an 8-year-old, for example, actually know that they're gay if they don't experience physiologically the sort of sexual attraction that we would experience as reproductively mature adults? And I think that that is important to bear in mind. We don't necessarily want to trespass on a child's development and lead them in one direction or the other just because we sort of happen to see things through our eyes in a way that doesn't necessarily capture their subjective reality.
Well, we should jump in to say that you would agree with most research that shows you can't lead them. I mean, you know, you can't change the direction in most cases.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, no matter what whatever views you actually happen to have doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to sort of impact or change or modify the sexual orientation of your child. But if you are wrong sort of in your assessment of their sexual orientation, that could also have significant effects in terms of their development. So I think we want to be very careful in terms of, you know, sort of opening up this can of worms in terms of talking to children. Having said that, speaking as somebody who is gay and has known that he's gay for a very long time, I do think that if my parents, for example, had an open conversation with me when I was, say, 12 or 13 about their suspicions or, you know, perhaps their intuitions that I was gay, yeah, it probably would have been a positive experience for me because it would have circumvented a long developmental trajectory where I felt like I had to hide my sexual orientation. And it would have clarified for me that they accepted me no matter what.
You know, we're reading stories of a father bringing home Barbie dolls to a 3.5-year-old boy because everybody was starting to realize he loved his sister's Barbie dolls. So is it more a gesture like that than saying, gee, 4-year-old, you know, let's talk about your love of Barbie dolls?
Well, I think it's important to separate or to tease apart the construct of gender identity and sexual orientation. One can feel like they are a female, for example, but still be attracted to other females. So it doesn't these things are not necessarily overlapping. The fact that you feel like a male or a female or a boy or a girl doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the biological sex that you happen to be attracted to.
And staying with the parents who just might be wondering, what do I do? How do I navigate something that in some ways they might feel is foreign to them? The Times talks about parents who are so wanting to support the child that, for instance, there's that little boy I mentioned whose father gave him a Barbie, went to a birthday party in a costume, and other fathers were calling him Liberace. Someone compared it to an L.A. drag queen. So the father realized that he was putting his own need to support his son ahead of perhaps thoughts about his son's own comfort and safety.
Well, I think that there is a potential problem there in the sense of overcompensation or this desire to express to the child that you accept them no matter what. And of course, most parents do accept their children no matter what. But we don't want to be premature in, you know, sort of rushing the child to make some statement about their own sexual identity.
That's true of heterosexual. I mean, that's true of all children.
It's that's true for all children. Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
What else do they need to know as these children get older? I mean, you know, the researchers seem to agree that you do have to wait. You know, you don't know at 3 or 4. Things might change up a little bit. But what as, you know, if children start going to elementary schools and getting teased?
I think it needs to be something that is discussed within the family situation openly and objectively, you know, in a way that makes it very clear to the child that there is no prejudice or discrimination, that there is love for them no matter what their sexual orientation, whether homosexual or bisexual or heterosexual. It doesn't really matter. The parent is sort of on the same journey with the child in the sense of understanding what that orientation happens to be. But I also think it's very important for the parent to be aware of their own biases sort of coming into the picture. If they're not terribly happy or satisfied with the possibility that their child may or may not be gay, why is that? I think that, you know, this parents probably should have some self-evaluative experiences, counseling potentially, or just a very blunt sort of acknowledgement of the fact that they are not comfortable with the sexual orientation of the child, and to find out exactly why that happens to be. You know, it sounds a bit trite, but parents need to keep an open mind to make it very clear to the child and in the context of family discussions that they are not bigoted, that they have no sort of dislike or distaste for homosexuals. Because even if that's clear to the parent, it isn't necessarily clear to the child.
Jesse Baring, author, psychologist, his column in Scientific American Mind, Is Your Child Gay? We'll link you at hereandnow.org. Jesse, Dr. Baring, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
And we want your thoughts. Are you a parent navigating this? Have you found a useful website or chat room? Or are you a gay or lesbian adult who has some advice? Go to hereandnow.org, where you'll also find links to all the studies we talked about. You can also go to facebook.com/hereandnowradio. Love to hear from you. Latest news is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu, and by the Institute of Contemporary Art, featuring the glass sculptures of Josiah McElhaney, on view now through October 14th, icaboston.org.